हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः नं जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Yeah, it says here, those who are fond of performing akarma and vikarma work are called antija. So that makes a differentiation between those who sometimes may by accident perform them out of bad habit, like that. That's not necessarily antija, that just means somebody's in a fallen position or someone's in a weak position. But here it says those who are fond of it, that means they prefer performing sinful activities. So then the different ashrams are according to the varnas by birth, nature, work, and qualities. So when they're determined by birth, then the whole purpose and the meaning of the varnashram is lost. It has to be, if the birth matches with the nature, work, and qualities, then it's fine. I mean, generally speaking, one will find that the nature, the work, and the qualities will match the birth. But if it doesn't, then it has to be taken by these things. Okay, then ashram, let me get to that. The ashrams are according to these states. One, being married. Two, not being married. And three, the renunciation of association with women. So, otherwise, generally we think of two. They're married, they're not married. But the brahmachari is not married. And he follows very strictly the brahmachari rules, but he may be planning to get married in the future. So that would be the difference. So then, when they give up this idea of association with women, then that itself then becomes the third state, the actual what one's trying to get. Yeah. So then, sometimes one would. Now sometimes many times it's brought up that it appears that in the Vedic literature that why it always just says, you know, the soul is referred to as he, and renunciation means giving up the association of women. So it appears that then it's dealing in a way that is favoring the men. But actually in this material world all jivas are thinking they're male. That's why they're here. Because Krishna is the male. So if we want to be God, we become the male. So we become the enjoyer. So therefore, then you can refer to any soul, no matter which body, male or female, it's in, as he. Only the liberated soul then goes back to the natural position of identifying as a servant of Krishna. But otherwise, a conditioned soul, there's always that element. That's what conditioning means, is one thinks one's the male. So then here, the renunciation of the association with women then can apply to anyone who's given up the endeavor to try to enjoy the material energy. Because material energy is feminine. It means whether we understand it that way or not, means you know, Maya, she's feminine. She's a servant of Krishna. She's doing her service. But the living entities, the jivas, then try to take advantage of that. They try to control or enjoy this. So this becomes a problem. So when one gives that up, then it comes to another platform. You know, the actual transcendental platform. So for what one is trying to get to, the constitutional position, that is feminine. Krishna is masculine. So then that functions. So therefore the definition matches like that. But if we take it on the bodily platform, yes, of course one can complain. But that's then that's another thing. You know, once you get into the bodily platform, then the body works the way it works. God made the arrangement, we didn't. It means women are going to walk as women. It doesn't matter how hard they try to walk as men, they still are going to walk as women. Physically, their bodies are constructed differently. Men are going to walk as men. Man's voice is going to work as a man's voice. Woman's voice is a woman's voice. All these things, it's just going to work in that way. So then in that way, we don't have any discussion in the matter because God made it. You know, it's just like us saying, you know, it's not a table, it's a car. No, God made it, it's a table, it's not a car. A car is something else. So then, in that way also, then it still stays within the thing, and it still matches. You know, so then one, from either aspect. But for us, the most important, then, if we're actually interested in liberation, is the aspect that the soul thinks that they are the enjoyer and controller. So to give that up, that's actually, you know, what Krishna consciousness is about. Okay, so here. They who are married are in the Grihastha ashram. They who are not married are in the Brahmachari ashram. They who have renounced association with women are in the Vanaprastha and Sannyas ashrams. Of all the ashrams, the Sannyas ashram is the best. Of all the Varnas, the Brahmin Varna is the best. This is all described in the crest jewel of all scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.17, 15-21, in the following words. Quote, the various occupational and social divisions of human society appeared according to inferior and superior natures manifested in the situation of the individual's birth. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, cleanliness, satisfaction, tolerance, simple straightforwardness, devotion to me, mercy, and truthfulness are the natural qualities of the Brahmanas. Dynamic power, bodily strength, determination, heroism, tolerance, generosity, great endeavor, steadiness, devotion to the Brahmanas, and leadership are the natural qualities of the Kshatriyas. Oh, this is 11th canto. Okay. Faith in the Vedic civilization, dedication to charity, freedom from hypocrisy, service to the Brahmanas, and perpetually desiring to accumulate more and more money are the natural qualities of the Vaishyas. Dirtiness, dishonesty, thievery, faithlessness, useless quarrel, lust, anger, and hankering constitute the nature of those in the lowest position outside the Varna ashram. Let's start the sound.
For the surges, did you get one?
Non-violence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for the happiness and welfare of all others, and freedom from lust, anger, and greed constitute duties for all members of society. So that would be the definition. And then service to the others. Right? So desire for the happiness and welfare of all others then would mean that everybody is performing their activities for the pleasure of the others. So the Brahmins are doing that through their teaching, the Kshatriyas through their organization, the Vaishyas through their generating and distributing wealth, and the Shudras then through assisting the others doing that. But otherwise, then this is there. So that's an interesting approach to it. You describe the other three because they're specific. It means, see, there's one approach to describing the Varnashram system means is you take what is the quality for a human being. So then here, non-violence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for the happiness and welfare of all others, freedom from lust, anger, and greed constitute duties for all members of society. That's everyone. Then from within that, then you have those who are able to generate economic development. Then you have those who are able to establish, you know, the religion and see that everything is, the people are protected. And then those who are able to study and teach the Shastras. You understand that approach? So therefore, Shudra becomes a very just natural, normal person. And then within that, then you have some people who are able or are expert at that, which you see is the way it is. Like you have a place like, let's say, Alachua. Big place, big community. Now in there are, that I've heard of, there's about 5 or 6 devotees who make huge amounts of money. There's a few more like that. But out of 700, 1,000, or 1,500 people who are there, five of them are expert at making money. And others probably have small businesses, this and that, you know. So then you have a handful. Even you have another 10, 20, 30, maybe 50, or 100. You know, but the point is there's only so many that are doing that. How many are, like, able to organize this, that whole community and really inspire, lead, do that? It's only a few. And how many are able to teach and run regularly, you know, these activities? It's few. But you see, most are, you know, nice devotees who are cultivating these qualities of nonviolence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for the happiness and welfare of all others, freedom from lust, anger, and greed. Like that. So therefore, the Vedic culture means human being is the best. But within best, there's division. Right? Just like you have in the spiritual realm, there is the transcendental realm. That's the best. Right? But we have the inferior qualities of the material world. Then the spiritual world, then that is the best. That's the superior standard. Just like human being who follows Varnashram is the best. But within that you have divisions. You have variety within transcendence. So therefore, Vaikuntha is, you know, perfect, or Dwarka is perfect, then Mathura is more perfect, Vrindavan is most perfect. But that doesn't mean that, you know, Vaikuntha is, you know, a write-off nonsense place. Right? It just means this, because then within Braj, then within that, then you have the rasas. And within that, then the conjugal is the best. Then within that, so many are in that, then all the different groups, and Radharani's group is the best. Within that group, Radharani is the best. So there's so much within one thing that is there. So within it, those who follow Vedic culture are the best, because that's human life. But within that, for the proper performance, there are gradations. But it doesn't mean the other is bad. Why I said the Brahman is the best is because they are teaching about the transcendental subject matter. Like that. The sannyasis are detached from and then are endeavoring for that higher position. So then they are able to give the best example and the best teaching. Like this. But factually, better than this is the Vaishnav. And in Vaishnavs, then the Uttamadhikari is the best. So therefore, that overcomes this. You know, just like a Brahmin has knowledge, but if there's a Kshatriya or someone who has more knowledge than the Brahmin will be going to them. Because knowledge is the standard. You know, that's not a problem. People, the sages at Naimisharanya are listening to Suta Goswami. Suta Goswami is from a mixed caste. His father, in their generation, somewhere in their line, the father was a Kshatriya, mother was a Brahmin. They're a mixed caste. So technically they are lower than the Brahmins. But all the Brahmins who are there, they're listening to Suta Goswami. Why? Because he has more knowledge than them. He has more realization than them. So this is just the general framework so that you have something to work from. But then there is the individuals within it and the interactions and all that. So this thing where we take just Brahman as normal and everything else as lower, you know, meaning it goes down into like mundane uselessness, it's not such a great approach. It creates social problems. Just like, you know, we say, oh, Vaikuntha this and Dwarka that and, you know, Like oh, I only like to read the Vrindavan pastimes. I don't like to read the Dwarka pastimes. So Prabhupada, who's Nitya Siddha from Vrindavan, he doesn't take very kindly to that attitude. You know, and similarly also the Acharyas. So we see that the how we view it is different. Because in the Karmakanda, it doesn't puts Brahmins, of course, as the best. But it does not put the sannyasis as the best, it puts the grihasthas at the best. Because in karma, the grihasthas are performing the yajna. Because they're doing the yajna, then the rains are taken care of, the demigods are taken care of, the forefathers are taken care of, they're given charity, right? It means the brahmacharis, the vanaprastha sannyasis, they don't necessarily have the money to give in charity to support all the others. So therefore, the whole society is being maintained by the grihasthas. Right? Means in the body, the grihasthas are the stomach. Right? The sannyasi is the head, the vanaprastha the arms. The grihasthas are the stomach, and the brahmacharis are the legs. So therefore, if your purpose is material health, then of course the stomach is the most important. If the stomach is not right, then the body is not healthy. I mean, Ayurveda is, it just goes back to that. If there's something wrong in the digestion, then there's no health. And if this digestion is good, then there's health. So if your purpose is fruitive activities, then you define the grihasthas as the best. Because it supports all the others. Because they were grihasthas, now they can be vranaprastha sannyasis. It means the brahmachari is studying under the grihastha. So from the grihastha comes all the other orders. The grihastha have the children that become the brahmacharis, that become the grihasthas, become everything. So you can look at it from that angle, that it's the best, if you're talking about material prosperity. But you see is that for those who are interested in transcendence, not dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, then the sannyasa is the best. Because that is the closest to getting out of the material world. But better than that are the Vaishnavas who are out. Mm-hmm. Like that.
The 11th canto gives another order because it's from the Bhagavad perspective. So it says the brahmachari is the heart, the grihastha is the loins, can't remember what the vanaprastha was, if it's the arms or... And the sannyasi is either the intelligence or the head.
Yeah, that's
so it's
right.
A different angle to the...
Yeah, because the brahmacharya actually is, whatever is learned in brahmacharya, that's what they do the rest of their life. Mm. Sometimes we have an idea that what you do as a brahmacharya, this is a brahmacharya, when you become a grihastha, that's all thrown out. No, the grihastha ashram is founded on what the brahmacharya ashram is. It's just like you build the building, you first build the foundation. But when you start building the building, you don't get rid of the foundation. It's built on the foundation. And if it doesn't stay on the foundation, then it's not strong. So when grihastha ashram moves from the brahmachari training and principles, it's not technically grihastha ashram anymore. Like that. Then it becomes fallen. Like that. But it has to be based. Just like the vanaprastha is based on the brahmachari. The sannyasa is based on the brahmachari. Therefore, you could say it's the heart. Because... all these general principles are learned by the brahmacharis. Because even though they may be brahmas, kshatriyas, vaishyas like this, they're being trained, that their training is actually technically like servants. Right? They're called, described as a menial servant. So they're trained like a shudra. Therefore, in one sense, you can call them the legs. Right? Because everything is carried by that. But at the same time, it's from the Bhagavad perspective, it's the heart that is the gives the... Because then you're talking about the whole mood and emotions rather than just it's being carried. Like that. So then it takes on a different quality. Like that. Because what's looked for is the mood. You always see, like in the Mahabharata, whenever it's describing somebody successfully completing the Gurukul, it never even... One word talks about what they learned academically. Nothing. So far now we've gone through and it's talked about so many persons, it doesn't say one word about what they academically learned.
I saw that.
All they say about is his character. And the final test was nothing to do with academics. They tested them on that, of course. But the actual test to graduate was something to do with their character. And you see some of them, they immediately have the right character, like Aruni of Panchala. His guru said, in the field, there's a breach in the water. You have to go stop that water from escaping, otherwise the crops will be ruined. He went there, one person, it's a big breach. He tries putting dirt, this, that. Big breach is washed away. So he looks at it and figures out that he's about the right size to fit into that gap. So he just lays down there himself and stops the water. And then he's there all day because the water has to be kept there. You know, Guru didn't say anything. He said, stop the water. He didn't say anything about coming back. Or stop the water for some time. Or, so then in the evening, when it was twilight, he didn't come back. Then the guru asked about him, and they said, you sent him to the field to stop the breach. So then they all went to the field. And when they went to the field, the guru started calling, where is this Aruni? He started calling for him. Then Aruni got up out of the ditch there, and then they presented himself before the guru, you know, and said, and then he explained that you had said to close this, and I didn't find any other way, but I laid down there, and that closed it. But now I'm getting up, now the water again's gone. So then, because of that, then the guru showed his favor. He gave him the name Uddalaka, which means basically one who's, by getting up, the water has gone. Like that. And he's one of the, you know, major sages, and with Bharadwaj and Katha and Sweta and these other persons. So then, that was it. Then he graduated. That was his test. But then, another of his godbrothers, then Upamanyu, then we see that it took a long time for him to learn his lesson. Though he was very, favorable in learning it, but he didn't quite catch it. His guru said, okay, you take the cows out to the field, the pasture. So he'd take them out, and he'd come back in the evening. And he's been out all day. And the brahmacharya is supposed to be maintained by the guru, like that. That way, he becomes dependent upon the guru. Because the principle is, guru represents God. Then the idea is, then you become dependent upon God for your maintenance, instead of getting it yourself. It is God provides it. Even you're getting it, still it's by the grace of God. The guru sends you out begging. The guru gives you what you're, you know, when you bring it back, then he gives you your share. So then you become dependent. So the whole idea is you become dependent upon Krishna. So then he went out in the field in the morning, early morning, came back in the evening. So the guru has given him nothing, but he comes back quite healthy, and you know, he's not looking weak and hungry and all that. So he says, how you're maintaining yourself? So then he says, I'm maintaining myself by begging. I go out begging, and then I eat that. You know, so which is the duty of a grihastha, but not of a brahmacharya. I mean, a brahman grihastha can do that, but not a brahmacharya begs, but he first gives everything to the guru. Then the guru gives him what is his. So then the guru explains this, you know, that you can't do like this. You have to give to the guru. Then the guru will give you your quota. So then he understood that, and then the next day he went out begging, bought everything to the guru, gave everything to him, and then the guru took everything and kept it all, and didn't give him anything, and sent him back to the field. So then in the evening again he came back, and again he was, you know, healthy and, you know, doing well. And the guru asked him, so, you're not begging and eating it yourself. And what you begged, you gave to me, I didn't give you anything. So how are you maintaining yourself now? He says, oh, it's no problem. I go out and beg for a second time, and I eat that. So then the guru said, you know, but if you do that, now you're taking from someone else's quota. It means you've gotten your quota, but if you go out begging a second time, there's other brahmacharis and other people who are begging, other brahmins and needy people. So you're taking from their share. The grihastha is only giving so much. They have only so much. They cook a certain amount. A certain person's put away for begging, and that's, you're taking from that. So the other persons aren't getting. So this is not proper. So then Upamanyu understood this and said, "Yes, tomorrow I won't do this." So then the next day he went out to the field, came back in the evening, was looking quite healthy, and the guru asked him, "Now you're not begging for yourself. You're not begging a second time, so how are you maintaining yourself now?" He says, no problem, I just drink the milk from the cows. Right? So then the guru says, you know, but the cows belong to the guru. Right? So if you're a hired person, fine. One-tenth of what's there is the person who takes care of the cows. That's the deal. They don't pay them. The cowherd then takes care of the cows, and he gets one-tenth of the milk production. But that's for grihasthas, that's not for brahmacharis. A grihastha shudra who's serving the brahman in this way, that's his payment. But he's a brahmachari. And the cows are the gurus, and so that means the milk belongs to the gurus. So how he's taking without asking. So then he understands that, and then he goes out the next day and comes back again fit. And the guru is asking, well, how is it that now you're so fit? So how you're contriving to maintain yourself now? He says, well, what I do now is I drink the froth from the milk that when the calves drink milk that comes out of their mouths. And then the guru says, well, the calves must be being very compassionate to you because this is all you're getting to drink. So they're throwing out extra foam. And so now you're depriving these calves of a full meal. So that's not proper. So then he went out to the field the next day. And then the next day, then he didn't eat anything. You know, by this time now, everything's been, all avenues have been cut off. So then he got very, very hungry. And so then he found this leaves, you know, new leaves of this one tree, the arka tree. And so he ate those, but the leaves are very pungent and acrid and salty and all this, very, very strong and disagreeable like tastes. And because of the strength of it, it made him blind. So then, being blind, he was crawling around trying to figure out where to go, and he fell into a ditch, a well. And so then in the evening, when he didn't come back, then the guru inquired and said, let us go and find him, because I didn't give him any means to maintain himself. So maybe he's not coming back, you know, for some reason, you know, some weakness or something. So then they went out and he called for him. And then he heard him, you know, from inside this well. And he asked, how you're in there? He says, well, I got very hungry, having nothing to eat, and I ate these leaves off this arka tree and I went blind. And so now I'm here in this well. So then the guru said, you offer prayers to the Ashwini Kumaras, they will come, they will restore your eyesight. So then he started offering nice prayers from the Rig Veda, and then after offering those, the Ashwini Kumaras, they appeared. And after appearing, then they offered him a cake and said, here, you eat this cake, and your eyesight will come back. And he says, you know, thank you very much, but don't mind, I have to offer to my guru. Like this. And then they said, no, you don't have to offer to your guru. The same thing happened to your guru. We gave him one of these cakes and he ate it. He didn't offer it to his master. So you follow in the footsteps of your master. Why you have to worry? He didn't do it. Why you should do it? He says, no, please don't be upset with me, but I have to offer it to my guru. Otherwise, I can't take. So then the Ashwini Kumaras are very pleased and they give him back his eyesight, you know, without eating the cake. So then when he came back and then related all this to his guru, then he had passed. Right? So we see that Uddalaka, he passed in just one test. He understood the mood and he passed immediately. The other one, it took him a while until he finally caught the mood and caught the understanding. Then he passed. So we see is therefore the symptom of an educated person is the character. It's not what they know, but it's how they know it, what they do with it, what's their mood of doing, the character in which they do it. That's we see as most important. Like here in the qualities, when it mentioned back here, birth, nature, work, and qualities. So we see birth is the lowest, qualities is the highest. Because by birth, then you can establish something, but not really much. It's not always works the way the birth is, and it's the lowest of all the ways. It doesn't really get the work done. Nature, then, is very important. That then sets the thing. Then within that nature, what work they do, that's more important. You know, it's just like. And then within that, the qualities. Because a Brahmin and a Kshatriya, you don't establish by work, you establish by qualities. You know, if you notice here, Brahmins, peacefulness, self-control, austerity, cleanliness, satisfaction, tolerance, simple straightforwardness, devotion to me, mercy, and truthfulness are the natural qualities of the Brahmins. It didn't mention one thing there on what academic subjects they know. It didn't say, well-versed in the Shastras and, you know, this, that. No, those are given for a Muni. A Muni must know the Shastra, be self-controlled, be able to curse, this, that, has his own philosophy. But here, the general principle then is qualities. Then we find here, the Kshatriyas. Dynamic power, bodily strength, determination, heroism, tolerance, generosity, great endeavor, steadiness, devotion to the Brahmins, and leadership are the natural qualities of the Kshatriyas, also qualities. Vaishyas, then faith in the Vedic culture, dedication to charity, freedom from hypocrisy, service to the Brahmins. So those are qualities. And then here comes work, and perpetually desiring to accumulate more money are the natural qualities of the Vaishya. Then you see something there. Also we see in the Gita, for the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, only qualities are mentioned. Though leadership, you could say, leadership is the service. But we see still leadership, by using that word leadership instead of administration, then that means qualities. There's a lot of difference between an administrator and a leader. Right? A bureaucrat and a leader are two different entities. It means a Shudra can be a bureaucrat, but not a leader. Like that. Oh, how did I miss that?
Qualities of the servant?
Yeah, that's right here. I just skipped over it. I guess I was so attracted by the dirtiness, dishonesty, thievery that I just immediately ran there and didn't notice this. It's here. Service without duplicity to the Brahmins, cows, demigods, and other worshipable personalities, and complete satisfaction with whatever income is obtained by such service are the natural qualities of Sudras. So we see the service is the first, and then by that, what they're going to receive from that, they're satisfied with. Like that. And then it gives dirtiness, dishonesty, thievery, faithlessness, useless quarrel, lust, anger, and hankering constitute the nature of those in the lowest position outside the Varnashram. So by tendency, we tend to put this, who are outside the Varnashram, we define that as a Shudra. You know, the Shudra's low-class, nasty, stinky, smelly guy. But no, that's called a Westerner. You know, the service without duplicity to the Brahmins, cows, demigods, and other worshipable personalities, and complete satisfaction with whatever income is obtained by such service are the natural qualities of the Shudras. This is a human being. You know, this is a high-class, you know, respectable, but dependent person. And then the general rule, then non-violence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for the happiness and the welfare of all others, and freedom from lust, anger, and greed constitute duties for all members of society. Therefore, Shudras, then they are not expected also to get absorbed in lust, anger, and greed. They're expected to be honest, they're expected to be truthful, non-violent, all these things. Then that's a good Shudra. If they're not, then it may be that they're not actually rightly situated, then they fall into the platform of the Antijas.
In the Ishupanishad, there's a verse on the culture of knowledge and the culture of nescience. And it's very interesting because Prabhupada's purport, he says that you can be educated academically in a university with a degree, but if you don't have the culture of knowledge, truthfulness, austerity, cleanliness, these types of qualities, then you are uneducated. And so, according to the verse and Prabhupada's explanation of it, an educated person is one who has good character or good culture. And so then Krishna mentions items of knowledge in the Gita. It's like, I can't remember.
It's 20.
20 items of knowledge. And he says everything outside of this is ignorance. And it's such things as approaching a guru, humility, austerity, control of the senses, those things are knowledge. It's not academic at all, it's character that's there in the heart and in the lifestyle. And so the point that you're making, that in these stories of the Mahabharata where the students are, it just tells what character they had. Then they're graduated as educated. Without even referring to their academic qualifications.
Yeah. You also see just with the pandavas and Duryodhana and all his brothers. Once Duryodhana, Dronacharya felt that he had finished their education, then he had the test. And the test was he put a wooden bird way up high in a tree. And then he called all of them there and said that now we're going to have this test, we're going to shoot this bird down out of the tree. They were all fired up, no problem shooting the bird down out of the tree. So then they come forward, and then, you know, Yudhishthira being the senior most of all the brothers there, then he called him, and he told him to, take aim, so he took his bow, pulled it, put the arrow, pulled it back, ready to shoot. He said, but before shooting, then I have some questions. Don't shoot till I give the order. So then he's ready to shoot, and then he says, what do you see? And he says, well, I see this bird, I see the tree, I see Dronacharya, I see all the, all of his brothers there. And so Dronacharya asked him again and again, are you sure? Are you sure you see me? Are you sure you see them? You see the tree? You see the bird? And he says, yes, yes. He says, you're not ready. Step down. Then he calls Duryodhana, because he's the next senior. So then the same thing happened to him. It happened to all the 100 brothers of Duryodhana and all the other brothers of the Pandavas. And then last he called Arjuna. And so then he asked him, when he was ready, he says, what do you see? And he says, I see the bird. And he says, do you see the tree? Do you see me? Do you see your brothers? He says, no, I only see the bird. Then Drona says, describe the bird. He says, well, actually, I don't even see the bird. I only see its head. Well, do you see the head right in the middle of the eye? So it's so it's not, you got a bird up in the top of the tree, it's pretty small. And so then Drona was very happy, he told him to shoot, so he hit the bird. So we see it was the qualities of his concentration and focus that he could tell whether he was actually a good martial artist or not. He was a good like that. Because the other, maybe you have great technique, but if there's no focus, you can't use it. It's one thing that you learn in a organized, like, workshop situation. It's another thing when you're in the field. So in the field, if that focus is not there, then you don't have anything. So even that, then they passed by that. But then when he goes to show the residents of the kingdom, means the citizens, then he doesn't talk about that. They go out and show the different weaponry and their club fighting and sword fighting and chariot riding and all the things. Then the people can see the external of it, the grossities of it. And then they're pleased, yes, these boys are trained. But for Drona, training meant that what was the quality of it. And, also another test he had for Arjuna he had a few other tests. Oh yeah, after that, then they went down to take bath at the river. And when they went to take bath in the river, then suddenly a crocodile caught hold of Dronacharya's leg. And then he called to all the students there, please save me, from this crocodile. I mean, he could free himself. There was no problem, but he did it just to test them. And so then all of them froze out of fright. They didn't know what to do. And so then, but then Arjuna immediately picked up his bow and shot 5 arrows the crocodile released its grip on Dronacharya's leg. So it was just that ability to use it. His resourcefulness, that's the thing of the Kshatriya. Dynamic power, heroism, tolerance, generosity, steadiness. So this Gita mentions resourcefulness. He's just immediately able to do something. About the others became afraid. So therefore this dynamic power, heroism, that was missing there. Their hero immediately come forward. But they got afraid. So then that became a funny. Come in somewhere. You need to put some ladders that sit on top of the Almighty.
Huh?
Yeah, that's it. So then we see is that's the real question in the Vedic culture, like what you're saying. Even in, you see in modern culture, technically, they say someone's a gentleman. It doesn't refer to what is their academic. You can have a very simple person. Like you could meet a taxi driver, but his behavior and that was very soft and, you know, proper and respectful. Then even the most educated person or most wealthy person or most powerful person would consider that this taxi driver was a gentleman, like that. Well, generally you just say someone that is, you know, academically educated, that gets respect, because knowledge must be respected. But it doesn't necessarily mean someone's a gentleman, you know, like that. So that's a very good point. Anything else on these points of the Varnashram? Oh, here. There's one last paragraph, then we can go into questions. In the assembly of the wise, everyone can understand the meaning of the scriptures. Therefore, I shall not give any comment on these words. I will only say this. The duties of Varna and Ashrama are the root of following the scripture's rules and regulations, Vaida. A country is impious to the degree it does not follow Varna Ashrama. What is it? Eloquence is truth spoken concisely. Yes. Any questions on this section before we go on to it? Because now he's going to go into another aspect. Yes.
Maharaj, when you were first talking about the different varnas, and you gave the example of like the Alachua community,
we're
to understand from that most people are Shudras.
Means my point is that you just have the common person. Means Vaishnavas are always special, and Vaishnavas are by definition Brahmins. I'm just talking about because it's something we know. Because we may not be more familiar if I say you take. We could use it in a different way, a different example. Because Vaishnavas are in a different category. Because the point is it's what work that one does. That is what is. Then, according to that work, you have to perform with those qualities. Just like if someone's going to do Shudra work. Let's say there's a Brahmin, but the only thing he can find to do is get a job somewhere. But he still has to perform those duties at that job as a Shudra would do. Right? It means this service without duplicity. Right? And satisfaction, whatever he gets, that makes a Shudra. So you see is when the Shudras are making strike, they don't respect the boss, they don't deal with others properly, they're not interested in the welfare of the company they're working for. That's what would make the difference between the companies in the West and Japanese companies. Japanese companies, the people were dedicated to the company, worked for the benefit of the company, were always thinking how to improve the company. Therefore, they prospered so quickly. Like that. While in America, it's the opposite. The Shudras are out there, you know, striking and not working and couldn't care less if the guy... They only want them to make money so they can pay them. They're not worried that the guy prospers. You know? Point is how much money you'll get for what you're doing. And someone else, he gets more, what do you care? So you're getting yours. You're happy with that. And if the others gets more, then it's nice. So, therefore, the point of happiness and welfare for all others. That's the basic principle. So we see it. There's a difference in the mentality. It means otherwise, you could take it in another. I just use that because it's something that we might have more understanding of. But we have to be able to qualify it because we're dealing with Vaishnavas. So they're automatically Brahmins. But it doesn't mean that by occupation they're doing Brahminical work. The economic development that they're receiving, their artha, is not necessarily coming from Brahminical Dharma. Right? They are, as Vaishnavas, they are Brahmins. But it doesn't mean that Brahmin isn't doing some other work to maintain himself. Best he doesn't, but in emergency he may be. You know what I'm saying? like that. So if you go out, let's say you go out into the streets of London. Okay, you're walking down, you know, the main street, right? And it's full of people. Okay, how many, let's say, you know, teachers and, you know, academic, you know, principals of schools and other educational institutions or, you know, qualified doctors and that, do you find walking in the street? Are they like a common sight? No. Okay, how many of the administrators of the country are you seeing, you know, the ministers and the other, you know, whatever it is, your prime ministers and whatever is the that they have there in the running of the state are there on that street? A lot of them? No. Okay, how many of the people that own the businesses do you see walking on the street? Yeah, not, yeah, maybe a few, but maybe not. Like you go into Marks and Spencer's, there's like thousands of workers there. But how many Vaishyas that own the place do you see? You could be in the store all day and never see them. Right? So the guy owns it. No, you generally see when you go into the shop, those people are all hired. Like that. Maybe if you go to the Indian shops, you might see the businessman there. But in the Western shops, generally not. The Jewish shops, you might find them also. Or if it's a really small shop, the guy may be. So therefore, on the street, what are you seeing? What are you meeting every day? What are you moving through in the crowd of people? On the trains, in the taxis, on the buses, on the street, in the shops. It's the common person. So in the Vedic culture, therefore, the common person should have these qualities. Non-violence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for the happiness and welfare of all others, freedom from lust, anger, and greed. And then service without duplicity to the Brahmins, cows, demigods, and other worshipable personalities, and complete satisfaction with whatever income is obtained by such service. So you could imagine if all those people you saw on the street had those qualities, what a wonderful society it would be. Right? Then on top of that, then you have people who then have, you know, great faith in the civilization, dedicated to charity, freedom from hypocrisy, service to Brahmins, like that. Always very expert at creating economic, you know, facility. Because if they don't create it, then where's the taxes going to come from? Where's the charity? Where are they going to take care of their shooters? So all money comes out of them. If it's not like that, then what's the use? Dynamic power, bodily strength, determination, heroism, tolerance, generosity, great endeavor, steadiness, devotion to Brahmins, and leadership. Then peacefulness, self-control, austerity, cleanliness, satisfaction, tolerance, simple straightforwardness, devotion to the Supreme Lord, mercy and truthfulness. Now, when you look at it from this angle, then those qualities, oh, wow, those are nice qualities. That's a real nice addition to the whole thing. If you approach it that, you know, okay, this is normal and then that's useless, then you'll find that even though probably majority of persons perform Shudra occupational duties and that's how they maintain themselves, but they'll never accept that. Personally, I can think of two devotees. I can't even remember the second one. I can remember clearly one who said, "I'm a Shudra," and they were very good at it. I mean, what qualities are mentioned here for Shudras they were doing, who they were working under, they were completely dedicated to, trying to help them, and very gentle, high class, like this. And they understood what they were, therefore they could do the duties properly. The others, no one wants to be the Shudra, not in the West. You know, it's too demeaning. Though everybody is. If you have a job, then that means you're a Shudra. No ifs, no ands, no buts. It's that simple. If you run the business, you're self-independent, your own business, you know, you are working, you are managing, and you are living off of taxes, or you are teaching, or that kind of Brahminical activities, and living off of that, not going out and selling stickers. That means then you're doing the occupational economic development of a Brahmin, or a Kshatriya, or a Vaishya. It doesn't mean that you're not a Kshatriya doing some other work. You may be a Brahmin and doing a business. So it doesn't mean you're not a Brahmin. But what I'm saying is economically, that's how they're maintaining themselves. It's just that's the way America's designed. That's the way the Western culture is designed. It's designed by the bourgeois. And so the bourgeois gets things done by what? By making everybody into hired people. Especially industrialization. You have a factory, you need 10,000 people in it. You know, you don't want Brahmins in there. They're lazy. You don't want Kshatriyas there. They're going to give you trouble, take over your country. You don't need more Vaishyas in there. You already are running it. So what do you need? Shudras. Right? And from their perspective, they want to turn everyone into making profit for them. So they want to control the government with their money. They want to control the Brahmins. Like that.
Women.
And the women.
And make women into...
Yeah, make women, women into... Yeah, because they're the best advertisers. Can sell anything with a woman. Like that. It means you have to have a really highly qualified man to sell something. But you can have just a mediumly qualified woman can sell anything. So therefore, then their thing they have to exploit.
But also as workers, because then you have a bigger workforce. And yeah. You have a bigger economy. Money's that's being generated and then consumed, spent, and it's...
That's a very, very good point. You expand the workforce. Because in the Vedic system, then the women stayed at home. The men would work. Now, if you really want to expand where people completely buy things and go insane with stuff they don't need, then you have to have more people working to get more money.
In modern times, women are in the street, in the stores. They're the ones who are spending the money.
Yeah, and they're also the ones that are selling it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're the salespersons. And, you know, the men stay at home and watch soccer. More economically viable.
More or less. When you're mentioning that the Shudra is satisfied with whatever he receives, more or less also the remaining quality, not to be disturbed, but to satisfy.
Yeah, what you see here is this non-violence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for happiness and the welfare of all others, freedom from lust, anger, and greed. That's the basic principles of everybody. If we read this out, generally we would say, well, that's Brahmins. No, that's Vedic culture. Because when it's an interesting thing, when Manu describes ashrama dharma, he only describes the Brahminical ashrama. He doesn't describe, there's not a separate ashrama dharma. You know, you go through Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. It's the same for all of them. You know, however far they go and wherever they situate themselves. The rules are the same for all of them. Only occupational duties, then there's a difference, as described here. Like that. It means we see is this is the description of the Varna Dharma. But Ashram Dharma, then we see is just very simple. You're either married, unmarried, or renounced. Like that. And then, of course, there's details, but it's very simple. But if you just say, you know, intellectual, this, that, you know, administrator, you know, business, labor, it basically gets it across, but it doesn't bring out the qualities. But here, then, it brings it out.
So, manushya mainly means very high class.
Yeah.
Human.
Yeah. Means human society is very high. Means we generally try, we just take the Western society that we know, and then we try to apply upon that Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. You know, so the guy there with the pot belly, you know, running the jackhammer in the street, that's a Shudra. You know, but probably the closest thing in the Western culture to a Shudra that would be similar to the Vedic culture would be a high-class, well-trained English butler. That would probably be the closest thing like that. And so that is, so you can imagine if everybody on the street had the character of an English butler.
Is that gentleman?
Yeah, it means the whole society would just be gentlemen. Then, on top of that, then you have people with extra qualities, the Vaishyas, the Kshatriyas, and the Brahmins. So you can imagine how much more wonderful than it would be. It means that the common person is like that English butler. And then with these qualities and how nicely it would be organized, how prosperous it would be, and how well trained they would be. Right? I mean, to get everybody like that, like those butlers, means training. Lack of training then creates the the modern scenario. So it's a very, very unique thing. So it's a very high thing. But, you know, after it's all said and done, the Vaishnava then is higher than that. But since he has to work in the world, he has to engage his conditioned nature, then he has to know how to work with... You want to do brahminical duties, you have to do it by these qualities. You want to do kshatriya duties, these are the qualities you have to follow. You want to do vaishya duty, these are the qualities. It's not enough just you start a business. Basic is that, yes, but it says here, you have to have faith in the Vedic culture. Because if you don't have faith in the Vedic culture, you will not be dedicated to charity. And if the Vaishya doesn't give in charity, then where's the prosperity? Then you have people who are immensely wealthy and people who are immensely poor. Right? So then in this, then money is flowing. So they're still wealthy. And the others are, you know, comfortable. They may be simple, but they're comfortable. Like that. So that's the, you know, freedom from hypocrisy. It's the biggest problem you see in the Vaishyas, is that say one thing, do another. That's very, very common. That's the difference. Brahman says, he does it. Kshatriya says, they do it. Vaishya should be, he says, and he does it. The 10 weakness is that they won't do it. Like that, because it may not be good for profit.
On top of this, Kali Yuga.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like that. So we're not saying that until you establish all this, it means that one has to understand that this is how it works. Devotees are saying how to make Varnashram, and we're not setting up the economic. No, you have to set up the qualities. Otherwise, the economics is already set up in the West. Right? The Western culture is also following Varnashram. They're all following it, but it's unsystematic. You know, the people are hired, the businessmen are doing the business, the administration, governments are doing their government work, and the teachers and doctors and they're doing their work, and it's going on, but it's not systematic. The Vedic makes it systematic. So they're doing it without the qualities. While the Vedic system ensures that people must have these qualities, then to that degree it does, then that degree it works. Yeah, that's his point here. The country is impious to the degree it does not follow Varnashram. So the more they follow it, it's considered more pious. Therefore, we see under the kingdoms of Lord Ramachandra, under the kingdoms of Yudhishthir Maharaj, or in Dwarka, places that are known for, you know, very highly civilized, then they're following Varnashram to the highest degree. And then we see in you know, so these examples, then they go beyond that, and then there's the Vaishnava qualities are there. So then it takes it even into a higher realm. So the difficulty comes is we're trying to live the lifestyle and enjoy the culture of the Vaishnava community, but we're not willing to accept kind of like the common general framework on which that community is based. You know, the social fabric is based is on Varnashram. And we try to do the highest culture means, you know, based on the lowest social system. So naturally, there's going to be some difficulty. Devotees find that. It's not practical to follow all the sadhana and do their work, or, you know, dress as devotees and do all these nice things that Prabhupada talks about, and at the same time live the lifestyle with the karmis and that they've accepted. So then they say it doesn't work. So therefore, you know, there's no faith in the Vedic civilization. So that drops one below the dvijas. Because Brahmins and Kshatriyas, they live it. The Vaishya has faith in it. Right? He lives it, but the main thing is he has faith. If he has the faith, then he'll do his best to live it. Like that. And the Shudra, he's guided by the others, so he's naturally engaged. So whether he has faith or not, he'll be rightly situated. So if one doesn't have faith in it, it drops one out of the dvija category socially. It doesn't mean as Vaishnava that one is not. You know, it's like Hanuman. He is, you know, he'll be a Brahmin by nature as being a Vaishnava. But at the same time, he's a monkey. You know, so he walks like a monkey, fights like a monkey, does funny things like a monkey. You know. like that. So it can be done, but they have faith, and they're bringing everything in line with the Vedic culture. So he follows the Vedic Dharma, though he may still do some of his, you know, monkey activities. Yeah. Yes.
You said that the symptom of knowledge, the symptom of knowledge is character.
Hmm.
And so ultimately the people with the highest character are sannyasis. So is that saying on some level that the grihasthas haven't reached highest knowledge, or is it just that the character affects consciousness and it doesn't necessarily mean that one has to take sannyas or be fully renounced if one has the inclination for grihas?
It means when you're dealing with the see, these are basic principles so that you can understand what's going on. You know, just like when you go to school, that then they give you certain examples of, you know, a particular sentence structure or a way to present something. But it doesn't mean that's the only way it can be done. It's something that, so that you can understand. That's the first principle. Second is the in the Vedic culture, the grihastha is getting married because of particular mundane needs and attachments, like that. So because of that, naturally it means the knowledge may be great, but the realization may not be full. So this is what this is knowledge, what is described, right? But we're trying to go beyond to the next step, which is vigyan, right? Though all those qualities that are there are also qualities of vigyan, but it's now it's a matter of difference between jnana and vijnana. Are you doing it because you know you're supposed to be doing it, or are you doing it because you realize that it's the best thing to do? Right? So that's the difference. So the whole idea is the sannyasa is supposed to be in that stage of realizing, and not they don't have the dependency on the whole emotional setup to stabilize them. While the grihastha, because of the natural those inclinations, then they tend towards this. But then means a grihastha means he goes in with knowledge. In the Vedic system you have a brahmachari, they're trained. What is the Vedic civilization? What is the knowledge? What is household life? And with that knowledge they go into it. So that but they don't have the realization. The difference between the naistika and the upakurvan is the naistika realizes what is taught just by hearing it. And, you know, hearing it or at least seeing it. But the upakurvana means he's heard it, he's seen it, he understands it, but he hasn't realized it. So the whole point of grihastha life is to bring one to that point of the vanaprastha and sannyas, or that detachment from the need for the support of women. That's its purpose. So it's for the same purpose as the others. It's just the one that's already been achieved and the other it's in the process of achieving it. So since that's what the purpose is, then it's not considered a lower position because its purpose is to attain that higher position. But if the purpose is not that, the purpose is not detachment from the material world, then it's considered lower. But then it's given a different name. It's not called grihastha, it's called grihamedi. Like that, because the difference between the two is nothing external. It's consciousness. You can have a first class, following all the Vedic rules and regulations, sattvic Brahman who's a grihamedi. Though technically we'll call him a grihastha. But a grihamedi means that the house is the center. His household duties are the center, not Krishna. So grihastha is the same. But it's just in the center of everything he does is to please Krishna. It's to be done for Krishna. That's what makes the grihastha. That's our definition. Right? For a karmakandi, then being centered on the house, that is a grihastha. And a grihamedi will generally be someone who is not so, they will compromise the Vedic rules and regulations for their own personal, you know, whatever it is. Enjoyment. In other words, they're working on prayas rather than shreyas. They're working on immediate more benefit than others. So they'll compromise. Yes.
Maharaj, you and most people in Kali Yuga are Vanashankar. It would seem that for Vanashram to function, essential to that would be the purification that would come from following the culture of him.
Means only by following the Vaishnav culture and the Sankirtan mission can one actually situate oneself in Varnashram. You know, it's just like our chanting of the Brahma Gayatri. It's only possible because we have the Pancharatra Gayatris. And that's only possible because we have the holy name. So therefore, we work from the in our system from the top down. Everything's descending. Vedic, then they would go step by step up. They could ascend, though the knowledge was descending, but their movement was by that. Ours is only because of the higher than the lower works. So as you remove the holy name, there's no question of Varnashram, no question of Pancharatra like that. So like what you're saying is correct. So the emphasis therefore is on the chanting. We see Prabhupada emphasized that, but at the same time he always talked about the other. But he keeps the balance. The balance must be in favor of the Sankirtan mission. Like that. Means here, in this, we're emphasizing the Varnashram aspect in that. One, it's the topic. But the other is we find that devotees are looking for a social system. They're looking for answers to their social problems. Their lack of ability to work with others and interface with others and have good relationships between, you know, members of the family, one family and another family, you know, a group of families and other groups of families, or between the devotees and their leaders, you know, like this. It's a problem. So they're discussing for the purpose of this, and, you know, no money in the pocket. So, but Prabhupada already gave the system, how to do and what to do and everything like this. But the difficulty is there must be faith that this is what's going to give it. Right? It means we take up the chanting because we have faith in something higher. You know, is it faith? There's a description of faith as something.
Sublime.
Yeah.
Unflinching trust.
Yeah. Trust in something sublime. So we have trust in that, therefore we're chanting. So you have to see the goal before you act. So the goal of Varnashram, the purpose of Varnashram, the benefits of Varnashram aren't being seen, therefore it's not being acted upon. Like that. As soon as they're seen, automatically you do it. You know, like that. It's a very natural thing. Just like, you know, yeah, samskars, we chant Hare Krishna, who cares? No, but this is for the health of the child. Their digestion will be good. You know, if they understood Ayurveda, everything comes back to digestion. So if you want to pick one thing only to ensure good health, you pick good digestion. So that's the anaprasana. Anaprasana ceremony is done so that the digestion of the child will be proper. Then you ensure so much of the health. And then general well-being, because besides just the body being healthy, the mentality, that whole interaction, the whole social thing, then you have paushtikarma. So there'll just be a balanced, normal person. Like that. The birth one is for brains. I mean, what's the use of being born and being a human if you have no brains, no intelligence? So it's called Medha Yajna. So then when they're born, then they feed them with that, I think, barley and barley honey from a ghee. Barley ghee.
Barley honey ghee?
Oh, barley honey ghee?
Different qualities.
Oh, I see. Well, whatever, like that. In a golden spoon. And that combination, when they take it, creates a chemical reaction that creates brain. So then if you think about it, then what parent then immediately wouldn't want, yeah, I want that for my child. So they understand what it does. But otherwise, oh, we just chant Hare Krishna, you know, and the kid runs around like a madman, and then they complain, I can't control my child, and teachers can't control their children. They're just, you know, crazy people. You know, but here, Prabhupada already gave the 10 samskars. You do this and you make your child a human. It makes it very nice. You know, it's purely mundane, but it's Vedic mundane. It's spirit, it's sattva-guna mundane, rather than the Western passion and ignorance mundane. So therefore, the children, though it's mundane, then you try to get them to develop the qualities of this truthfulness, honesty, all these things that are just the general qualities.
The other thing is that if we're supposed to be offering our activities to Krishna, then Krishna likes sattvic things, sattvic food, sattvic flowers, sattvic attitude. And so when the Vedic lifestyle is presented as a sattvic lifestyle, you can offer that to Krishna. So if we're saying that having children is my offering, or we're supposed to get karoshi, yajnasi, yajduhosi, then it helps to make a nice offering by living according to the standards of Varnashram Dharma.
Yeah, yeah. A very good point.
In all these samskaras, one item is common, is that the Grihastha has to give ample charity, so it becomes detached, and also creates the real longevity and health and intelligence of the child who's being given. So in all the time, the Grihastha has to be given.
Yeah. Means you want, you have to give. That's the thing. That's the interesting thing about energy, is that you want one side, the other side has to be there. Right? You can't. Means you are miserly, you'll lose money. You give money, the more you give, the more you get. The more you keep, the more you'll lose. So it's a very interesting thing. So because the grihastha needs to expand and have things, have prosperity, therefore they have to give prosperity. You know, and naturally, you know, sometimes they're giving, sometimes they're receiving, at least amongst the, you know, the brahminical crowd. Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they're only giving, you know. It means they may receive gifts from friends and things like that. They don't receive charity. But it's a good point. Because one has to learn to be detached, because ultimately one means whatever wonderful arrangements one has, still it may satisfy the body. The body is very satisfied, the mind is satisfied, the intelligence, the ego is satisfied by the nice, prosperous, you know, family life, but the soul won't be satisfied. Soul will only be somewhat satisfied because it has the material consciousness. So therefore, control, enjoyment is obtained. But still there'll be a frustration, there'll be a lack, because that's not what satisfies the soul. Service satisfies the soul. You know, service and of service, service to the Supreme Lord. So then when they are able to serve the Lord by their service, sadhana, and that, see their, what Prahlad was mentioning, is see the activities of their household life as offerings to Krishna, like that, so that service, then there starts to be satisfaction. So then at the end of the day, the vanaprastha, the reason they're able to be detached but not become dry persons, is because they've taken up that mood of service. So they've taken up the actual nature of the soul rather than the covered nature of the soul. So that detachment is, that's why this, in for the Vaishnava parati, then they put the sannyasis on the top rather than the grihasthas on the top. Like that. Top meaning the best, like that. Always respectability in both Vaishnava and non-Vaishnava systems. The sannyasi is the most respected, then the vanaprastha, then the grihastha, then the brahmacharya. But as which is the best, means you want to go back to Godhead, detachment is the best. Mm-hmm. You want to prosper in the material world, then the grihastha is the root. Like that. Yeah, so, okay. You want to say something?
Sometimes devotees go outside to experts in the material field to try to learn how to solve social problems or train leaders and stuff. Can you please comment on the value of this?
See, as if you already understand the principles that are given, then for certain modern situations, one might find something useful, but it always has to be converted back into the... In other words, if it matches with the scriptures, it's useful. If it doesn't match with the scriptures, it's not useful. But at the same time, is if one doesn't bring it back, you've changed the culture. Because the culture we see is the mood. And you don't see these qualities spoken by anybody. There's no management book, there's no social book, nothing that talks about this. Like that. Some say Yuma has some good qualities, but they don't talk like this. They definitely don't talk about detachment. You know, it's a nice thing to give in charity. It's a good thing. Like that. You know, it's a sentimental thing rather than it's actually something to purify. Right? In the Vedic culture, charity is for purification. The modern is for sentiment. So therefore, it stokes the ego.
Enhance the ego.
Yeah, enhances the ego. While the Vedic, if it's done properly, it reduces. It establishes properly the ego of the conditioned nature, that this is the conditioned nature of my gross and subtle body. So therefore, this gross and subtle body should be giving in charity. Like that. So it establishes that, but you don't identify with it. That's the thing, is you don't identify with it. So it can be done if it doesn't contradict, but one has to be very careful that one doesn't introduce the cultural flavors that are there in by those people, those karmis also. Because they haven't solved their problems either. You know, for all their nice work in the field of, you know, marriage relationships, divorce rate is just increasing. Right? For all their things of
children's
psychology. Yeah, children's psychology, I mean, whatever it is. I don't know if he's still alive, old, good old Dr. Spock.
Now they are shooting themselves in the school with the new systems.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Dr. Spock, when he was old, you know, 80 years old or something, he figured out he was wrong. You should discipline children. So he'd been preaching for, I don't know how many years, 40, 50 years, you know. Probably half the kids on the planet had grown up by Dr. Spock's advice, you know. Promiscuity. And then, like you said there, they're shooting each other in the schools. Some schools, they have metal detectors before the kids come in. They check them for guns, this, that. You know, the teachers carry guns in case there's a shootout in the classroom. You know. Someone was telling me, one teacher was telling me, is that, you know, this going on, he's doing his class stuff, and then there's kind of like all kinds of giggling in the back of the class. And he says, you know, yeah, stop all this. He goes to the back of the class to check what's happening. There's two students on the ground with no clothes on having sex in the back of his class. And he can do nothing about it. You know? And so, unfortunately, we can say what we like, but the reality is they don't have a clue. They're simply observing the material energy and seeing which is more favorable and less favorable there. But the Vedic culture already has that worked out. So even you take that book, you're going to have to study it, you're going to have to practice it until you realize it. So for the same endeavor, you take the Vedic literature, try to understand it, try to practice it until one realizes it. Like that. One wants to take help from that, fine, but if one doesn't convert it back, then one's dealing in a different culture. You know, as it said here, you don't come close to this Vedic, then it doesn't work. It's impious. Because, like Prahlad was saying, then it's not a nice offering to Krishna. Like that. Does it make some sense? So it can be used, there's nothing wrong, but at the same time one has to be careful that it doesn't influence us socially. It means the flavor of things.
So usually in the Vedic system, in the Western system, they're taking the comparison. Comparison is usually, themselves is a comparison, it's good for me or not good for me. Yeah. But in the Vedic system it's Krishna. Krishna is the comparison everything to Krishna is good for soul if to go back to Krishna or not. Or is it pious or not pious is means is against Dharma or not against is following Dharma or not following Dharma. That's like that. But in the Western system it's not like that.
Yeah. It's interesting. Prabhupada mentions on this point, I think it's in the Bhagavatam. I think you gave me the thing. It's Bhagavatam or Gita. But Prabhupada is saying that this culture is based on sense gratification, this culture is based on the mind, this culture is based on the intelligence, and this culture is based on transcendence. So those cultures that the goal is like what you say, what's good for me, what's good for the senses and that is cultures based on that platform. So that's anamoy, pranamoy. You know, higher end is pranamoy. run some charities or, things like that, open an eye clinic or something. The culture is based on the mind, that's the Vedic culture, because then it's what is satisfying to the emotions, what is the mind. The Bhagavad Gita is a culture of the intelligence, Buddhi Yoga, because then you understand the soul. At that point, then the focus is on the soul. On the Vedic culture, you have to accept the soul to make it work. At least you have to accept, how do you say, properly, that you're going to have another body, so therefore one should properly follow so the results you'll get nicely later. Though I think the Vaishya seekers, I'm not sure how they work out that problem, because when the body is finished, everything's finished. I don't know why they bother with the Varnashram, but whatever, there must be some reason like that. But then the transcendental is when everything's done for Krishna, like that. So that's the
That's Bhagavatam.
That's the top culture.
In the end of this chapter that we are reading at the temple, when they send Bali Maharaj already to Sutala planet for Bhamana Devaska Sukracharya, now we can discuss what was the fault of Bali in rejecting you. And then he said exactly what the devotee said, what hope he can have. He already pleased you. He already pleased means that everything he did is perfect. And even the chanting of the mantras and everything has any fault, because he was chanting your holy name, everything has become perfect. So even though he is the guru of the demons, he is saying that that's satisfying Vishnu is perfect.
Even the demons have to recognize that, because he's a Brahmin, so he must speak truth. Like that, they know, but it's just they don't like. Like that. But Sukracharya, he was, from the how you say, the group of the demigods. But because of his, he ran into, I don't know the story, but some animosity with Brihaspati. So therefore, it was kind of like, well, I'll show you. And so he decided to go become the guru of the demons. So originally, he's not from the demon stock.
Bhrigu quote, I think.
Huh?
I think he's from Bhrigu's family.
He's from the line of Bhrigu. Yes, that even means of Brahmins. That's the top. Those in the line of Bhrigu are considered the best of the Brahmins. But they're special even amongst Brahmins. But just out of false ego, then it's basically to get Brihaspati. Because Brihaspati advises the demigods, so he wants to get Brihaspati, so he advises the demons. He's not really on the demon side. He's just not on Brihaspati's side. That's his position.
Sometimes happen this and ISKCON.
Hmm?
Sometimes happen this and ISKCON.
Yeah. No, it's a common thing amongst neophyte devotees. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada gives the example of the two, I think, sons or two disciples massaging the 2 feet of the guru. So one always massages the right and the other always massages the left. But then they get into an enmity. So then just to bother the other one, they may disturb the foot of the guru that the other one does, takes care of, just to give them trouble. But they don't understand it also gives the guru trouble. So that's the difficulty with the neophyte. The vision is not broad enough or deep enough. So they sometimes take their emotional needs and all that too seriously. It's like, and because they're always changing. Today one is emotionally this way, but tomorrow it's another way. So therefore one can't put too much faith in the emotions. They must be attended to, but one has to know how to attend to them. Like the modern psychology can't tell the difference between, the fine difference between the intelligence and the mind. And it can't tell why the mind or the brain produces all the different brain waves that it does, like that. Like beta rays are good for concentration. Then the gamma rays, then they produce kind of, happens when things are by habit, and it produces dream and these other kind of things. So that's considered by the modern theory bad, because it distracts from your focus. But if it is based on purity, then when habit is there and you can go into the dream state, what are you supposed to be dreaming about? Right? So that's the thing, is that one is always meditating upon Krishna, because the mind will just take care of doing that thing without even noticing. You know, like you're cutting the sabji. You don't have to be concentrating on every little aspect of the cauliflower. Because after a while, you can just do it. You know, if you only do that, and that's okay, that's good, it's nice, because you're trying to do it for Krishna. But then the next stage is that you can cut the cauliflower without even thinking, at the same time being thinking of Krishna, remembering Krishna. So therefore, these things, these science, they won't know, because it's based on the purely mundane science. Its foundation is why people are crazy. So the science is based on studying crazy people. That's its foundation. They may use it in present day for also trying to help people that aren't crazy. But generally you'll see they're trying to solve a problem. You know, how much have they studied someone who is nice? Right? Like that. There may be some, but its foundation is still upon, the principles are based on who's crazy.
No, so they are doing it, but the action anumana, they never relent.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because they're working just by observation. How much can you get by observation? You can get a lot. Very intelligent, very analytical. You can see so much. Therefore, people are able to write books and people appreciate, because they've actually seen some truth of the material energy. But only the Shastra can give you the full truth of the material energy. Therefore, there's always a weakness. You know? Like that. Like you see, like senility. People can't concentrate. You know, they just go off into tangents and forget where they were. So they're talking here and they see something and they get off into that. So, in the material platform, if you want to be materially prosperous, it's really bad for holding down a job, making money, you know, getting involved in mundane activities. It's a bad thing. But if you look at it in terms of, it comes along in mid-age, it doesn't come when you're young. It comes when you're older. Actually, you check, it's when the time when one's supposed to be vanaprastha, sannyas, like that age. So then, the thing is if one has that knowledge and cultivation on Krishna, then it's like you can focus on things and just go into them and just take off into Krishna consciousness. The distractions will take you out to Krishna. So one would become more and more focused on this, where you don't even notice what's going on around you. You see old people, they get so distracted, they don't even notice what's going on in their surroundings. So if that's used for remembering Krishna, then what's called technically Udipan, what makes you remember Krishna, then it can be to advantage. So there's no disadvantage. But in the modern thing, it's a great disadvantage. You want to be the CEO of a company at 65 and you're starting to lose your memory and can't remember this and that. And you know, the young guys are just going to move you to the side, you know. But in Krishna consciousness, it's not. You just get into your chanting, because the spiritual is not forgotten. It's material. You forget material. You don't forget spiritual things. You know? Like that. So therefore, it's not a disadvantage. So these things, the modern experts will not know. They can't know. How they'll know? What is the basis on which they'll know? So it may be good as a start or to get an idea to break things up, and then you look into the scriptures and say, hey, that's already here. That's okay. It means you can start from the scriptures and then, you know, take advantage of these in some application, or study this and then put it back into there. But if it doesn't include the Vedic, then it can never really understand what's going on. There'll always be a weakness. There'll always be a weakness. You know, you study the atom. Why does it work? Why do all the things fly around? If it's dead matter, how can they fly around? Unless there's a little paramatma inside there. So because he's in there, therefore everything's flying around. Yeah. You know, but nuclear physicists don't see that. You know, I mean, it'll be pretty amazing. One day they tune into their new microscope, and when they get down there, then they see this little guy with four arms there.
The paramatmoscope.
Yeah, the paramatmoscope. And as soon as they say that, then they'll lock them up. So therefore,
you did, Maharaj. I was reading in the paper the other day that, you know, one American scientist was, when they do particle acceleration, and they broke up the atoms to see what they made out of, and they wanted to see what actually makes the mass of the atom, and then they were breaking it up into all the different particles, and it wasn't adding up, and he named the mystic particle the God particle. So now they're like starting to think, hey, hang on, you know.
They found out that they're each atom is individual, they move in a complete individual pattern. So they found there's some consciousness in there that's acting individually by his own will, because no, they don't move in the way that they think that it should move. It's random. They're a puzzle.
The God element.
Maharaj, in South America, we did a study in astrology, going to a place where there's all crazy people, and they all have aspectated Saturn and the Moon. And this is exactly the quality that they need to get different troubles in the mind and in the psyches. But the scientists don't believe in astrology yet. But they will go through there then when they discover other rays influencing the minds. They just see the rays of the sun, but they don't see the other rays yet.
There's just so much to offer, but the problem is we're not trying to establish Varnashram in the world, free, separate from Krishna, because then it just means that you get, you know, like Bali Maharaj, you know, not Bali Maharaj himself, but that the demons, they follow Varnashram because they're not stupid. They want to enjoy the material energy to the max, and they know the only way to do it is through Vedic culture. So therefore, then they'll take these things, and though it may give an opening for Vedic, but at the same time, we have to remember the smartas also have full faith in Vedic culture, but their goal is different. That's why always when we deal with it, we always have to bring in the higher aspect of consciousness. Otherwise, then it will be misused. You know, because for us, Varnashram is Daiva, means Krishna is always the center.
Well, we have the smartas and the Mahatma, Ramanuja, and Sampradayas, or they are away.
No, smartas means those who basically worship Shiva or Durga. Means those who worship material energy, like that.
But some become smart as also by becoming too ritualistic.
We'll say like that, just like if somebody doesn't behave properly or like that, we may say they act like a shudra, you know. They get too mental. Act like, but they don't. Vaishnavas aren't shudras. And they act like a shudra, but it doesn't mean they are. You know, Prabhupada never said, you're a shudra, or, you know, this, you know, like that. He would say, you're acting like one. Meaning they're lamenting, they're getting too absorbed in, you know, things that they shouldn't. Like that. So,
Krishna told that to Arjuna as well.
He
said, Putastva.
Shudram Hridaya Durbhaya.
Because shudra, the root means, what is it? What's the
root? Shudra.
Sucha means to lament. So that's the thing. Always lamenting is something here. Oh, this is that. It's always a problem because that's the taste. That something's always a problem. So then
the sad poppers of the West.
It's always if everything was normal, who'd watch? Like that. I remember my grandfather said that in the Midwest, one guy got so sick of bad news in the newspaper, he decided, I'll make a newspaper that only has good news. And it only lasted some days. No one would buy it. It has a business, it just flopped. People want to hear the bad news. So that's the...
That's why BNN is so famous.
Like that,
makes them feel
that
life's not so bad.
Yeah. If someone else is in a worse situation, then it's, you know, it's okay. Today's what? Thursday? Okay. So then we should end here. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samavita bhaktavinda ki
jai.
Sangita Govinda ki
jai.